Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. If this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. And having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you all can do me a big favor. Please check out some of our past shows at answersforthefamily.com to hear some informative and entertaining guests, as well as some dynamic co-hosts, discuss ways for you and your loved ones to become happier, healthier, and more at peace. I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know that can benefit from a particular subject. I want you to know that I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, I'm glad to have with me as a co-host, and before I tell you a little bit about him, I had somebody recently that said that they're starting to see a pattern in my choice of co-host, so that must mean I'm doing something right, because they said, wow, the last few co-hosts you've had have been like right on target in regards to the subject matter. So I think I've done that once again. I have with me who is also a personal friend. It's Dr. John DeWitt. And John has a very interesting background. So John started out, he was a walk-on to the football team at Vanderbilt University. He then earned a scholarship after only one semester. He was awarded second team all SEC honors as well as defensive MVP at Vanderbilt, and he went on to play for the Houston Oilers of the NFL. The Oilers then sent him to Europe, where he won the World Bowl in 1996 with the Scottish Claymores. The next decade found Dr. DeWitt playing on a variety of football leagues, from the CFL in Montreal to the XFL in San Francisco. After football, John went on to pharmacy school before deciding to take a more holistic approach. He then attended Southern California University of Health Sciences, got his Doctorate of Chiropractic degree, and he became an advanced sports nutrition specialist and is certified in concussion assessment. Now, unfortunately, his father currently suffers with early-onset dementia, which is one of the things that has driven him to study more in-depth about brain health, concussions, and natural ways to protect the brain. Personally, John suffered at least four concussions that he knows of during his own football career. His mission now is to share what he has learned, both from a personal and a professional perspective, which one of the ways he does that, he does it through his books. He also does it through his concussion class webinar. So, John, first, thanks for joining us, but also thanks for everything that you're doing for helping many of us.
Oh, thank you very much. It's exciting to be here, and hopefully I can contribute as much as I can. It's always fun on the show.
Well, I'm sure you're going to be able to contribute quite a bit. And for those that have mentioned that they've noticed that I've been pretty good at picking a guest co-host, you probably will all know that we're now going to be talking about traumatic brain injuries. And we have a guest who is really involved in some cutting edge work. So, and that is Dr. John McMichael. So he is the co-chairman and chief scientific officer of Rosales Bio, a privately held pharmaceutical company formed by Beechtree Labs, of which he is also the founder and CEO. So Dr. Michael is an Alzheimer's disease research pioneer, having licensed 30-plus patents to Elon Corporation to support their Alzheimer's initiative. He now holds more than 100 patents, with twice that pending worldwide. and his experience includes he's a professor of biology and health sciences at Edinburgh University in Pennsylvania, general manager of immunotherapeutics, where he licensed a veterinary anti-inflammatory product. He's vice president of Molecular RX Incorporated, a biopharmaceutical company focused on products for managing inflammatory responses. He was founder and president of Milkhouse Laboratory Incorporated, a company now focused on botanical agents for nutraceutical use, and founder and president of the Institute of Therapeutic Discovery, a not-for-profit organization focusing on the interplay between biochemistry and biophysics in the course and management of health and disease. Dr. McMichael, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I've had a chance to go over sort of like a PowerPoint presentation of a lot of the things that you're doing, and I got to tell you, I am so excited over the fact that you're involved in so many cutting-edge things that I think is really going to change the way in we look at traumatic brain injuries. So, to start off with, why don't you share a little bit for our audience, just a little bit about what constitutes a traumatic brain injury, or what type of injuries that result in what is then called a traumatic brain injury or a TBI?
Well, there's any number of ways to get a traumatic brain injury. In this country, the leading causes are accidents. Those can be anything from falls to auto accidents or bicycle accidents, things of that sort. In second place, are assaults. Assaults are the second cause of traumatic brain injury. And third are athletics, even though athletics seem to get more of the press than the first two do, and have brought a lot of people to become more familiar with what traumatic brain injuries are all about. What we're looking at in our company is what we call chronic traumatic brain injuries. A lot of emphasis in the industry is on the acute stage. That is, what happens immediately after a concussion, how long, for example, before a football player like Dr. DeWitt can get back into the game safely, or how long they should sit out, things of that sort. We work with patients who have had an injury at least 6 to 12 months before we start with them. So they have probably experienced all the spontaneous healing they're going to get. We want to see if we can do something more for them. And these injuries, again, range from anything from accidents to athletic injuries to gunshot wounds, anything that can influence the anatomy and the physiology of the brain.
So let's talk a little bit about, as far as you have something that is referred to as it's SLO. Describe sort of how this was discovered.
Okay, all right. Be glad to do so. Our work on this molecule has continued for nearly two decades now. And initially, we were interested in scarring, both superficial scarring, anything from acne scars to surgical scars and things like that. And then we found with a little manipulation it could be used for the treatment of internal scars. And, you know, you ask, well, what's an internal scar? And that's the kind of scarring that occurs. It can be surgical, like gynecological surgery or open heart surgery, things like that. But there are also naturally occurring scars that result simply by normal physiology associated with aging. And we found with diseases like cardiomyopathy, cirrhotic livers, things of that sort, that we could see some progress in reversing scarring. We had a couple NFL players or ex-NFL players who were being monitored by a physician in our group who was treating them for these kinds of scars. And one of them said, you know, doctor, I really appreciate your helping my knee. It's got more flexibility now than it's had for years and all that. He said, but what's really kind of exciting to me and a surprise is that I seem to be doing better functionally from a mental standpoint. And the physician questioned him pretty closely, and, you know, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, let me give you a couple examples. I can go to the grocery store now, and I don't have to call my wife to remind me about why I'm there. I can also get there without directions. I don't need my GPS anymore. I can remember how to get to the grocery store. But he said the most exciting thing for me is I can read again. And we said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, I could read before, of course. I knew the words, but by the time I got to the bottom of the page, I'd forgotten what was at the top, and now I can read and remember. So that's what God is still looking then at some other patients who had traumatic brain injuries, whether from football or other sports or accidents or whatever, and we found a fairly consistent response of the sort that this first patient reported.
And I know too, Doc, that you did a lot with, or you're doing a lot with Alzheimer's patients. And since my dad is suffering with early onset dementia, I can really relate to the not remembering what you read. Because I remember a time when I was visiting with him and he had a piece of paper in his hand and he was showing me the piece of paper and it's all the different supplements and things like that he was taking. And I answered his questions. And then 5 minutes later, he hadn't put the piece of paper down. So he didn't realize that he had asked me about them. And so then he asked me about the paper again, and that happened like 3 or 4 times in like a 20-minute span.
Yep, that's the tragedy of the dementia. And that's what our focus, as I mentioned earlier on, is on traumatic brain injury now. But we are looking at kind of the, once we get traumatic brain injury formulation through the FDA or through phase 2 trials of the FDA, which is our target now, then we would like to do a little bit more work with not Alzheimer's in particular, but dementia in general, because mm-hmm. we find some common denominators. And using the TBI medicine and adding a couple molecules to it, we've had some early success with reversing some of these memory problems associated with dementia.
And how long does that phase 2 for the FDA, how long does that take?
Well, it's all, not surprising, it's all a matter of finances.
Right.
If we had the money in hand right now to do all the work we need to do to get through what is called a phase 2 FDA trial, this is a placebo-controlled double-blind trial, would take probably 2.5 to 3 years.
Wow.
From start to finish. And that includes some more animal toxicology work and then what's called a phase 1 study, which is a safety study in healthy volunteers, and then the phase 2 study itself.
Now, Dr. McMichael, for those people that are dealing with something right now, what are some of the things that they can do? You know, if somebody is the caretaker for someone who is at a level with their traumatic brain injury that they really need to focus on something now, and they're looking at this and they're going, "Wow, I don't know that 3 years from now, they're going to make it that long or something." What can they start doing right now to help them be around to be able to get the benefit of the things that are coming up in the future?
I would defer to Dr. DeWitt with his experience on that, because I think he has a better handle on the here and now therapy than our group does with respect to this push that we're making to the FDA to get ours available for other patients. So Dr. DeWitt, I would ask you that question rather than me.
Okay. There are a ton of things that people can do, and it's difficult because a lot of them are lifestyle changes, and for whatever reason, those are some of the hardest things for people to stick with. And it can be very frustrating. They, always encourage to have a health coach or an accountability coach of some sort to make sure that they're, you're doing your brain exercises. They have apps on your phone, brain games, luminosity, things like that, that can really help stimulate the brain to make sure that you're making those neuronal connections and increasing the synapses. And then also the medium chain triglycerides with the coconut oil is really, really important, because what happens is in the acute phase of a concussion, your brain, it has a massive depolarization. And that goes back to the action potential that causes the nerve to fire and the nerves can communicate with each other. But when it does happens at a large scale, there's a variety of things that happen. And one of them is that calcium starts to build up inside of the mitochondria, which is the power plant of the cell. And when that happens, then it's not able to give you the energy that you need. And it causes you to shift into anaerobic respiration. So that's why medium chain triglycerides, which are really popular, like with the keto diet, the ketogenic diet, that helps you to get more things like coconut oil, things like that, that allows you to burn fat instead of sugar. Glucose is what drives the Krebs cycle, which is how you get your energy, your ATP. But this allows you to burn fat to get that energy. And that's another really important part of helping you establish that connection again. And also, I know a big part of the SLO that Dr. McMichael's working with helps with the inflammation. And right now, in the short term, you can do curcumin or turmeric. A gram twice a day is very, very helpful for inflammation. It's a natural way to help with inflammation. And there's some other nootropic herbs and things like that, like Bacopa monnieri and those kind of things that help and have shown to help people with memory issues. And Dr. Dale Bredesen is he's been working on Alzheimer's as well, and he came up with the RECODE protocol. He has a book called The End of Alzheimer's that is really interesting because he addresses the fact that everybody's different. And so I think he's identified 60 to 80 different factors that can affect your memory. And he has a whole variety of lab tests you get done to make sure that your hormone levels are okay, that your insulin resistance is where you don't want to have insulin resistance, that you're getting enough sleep, melatonin, magnesium, all these different things. And I think that's very, very helpful. But like I said, you have all these things and people think, oh, well, you know, I'm just in the early phases of cognitive decline. I'm going to just wait until it gets where I can't remember, how to get home or how to get to the grocery store. And he's really stresses the fact that this is a progressive condition and you don't want to wait. I mean, the best time to start would be yesterday because you really have to get on this and stick with it. And unfortunately, with the RECODE protocol, he saw that people that did get improvement and were able to return back to work, they started getting comfortable and they stopped doing the protocol and stopped eating the right foods and getting enough sleep and doing the brain training. And then within 2 weeks, they started to backslide and get back again. So it's a literal lifestyle change that you have to stick with. And that is, like I said, that's the unfortunate thing. People don't like having to do something that makes them not eat their favorite food or drink or whatever. And unfortunately, in the short term, that's kind of all there is to help right now.
Wow. Well, it seems like that would be the the easier things to do. But yeah, I get it. I mean, if we can't get people to make those changes, I can see where it's going to be more difficult to do things that might be even more drastic in the future.
Right.
What are some of the, well, let's kind of go to some of the statistics, because I had some people that asked me and they said, well, you know, how big of a problem is this? And I think this question may be for both of you, both from an American standpoint and from a worldwide standpoint. What are the statistics now of people that are suffering from traumatic brain injuries?
Dr. McMichael, I'll leave that one up to you because I'm just with the athletes mostly.
Okay. I'll jump in on that one. In this country, it's estimated between 5 and 5.5 million people are suffering from chronic traumatic brain injury. Interestingly enough, there seems to be very little variation in incidence country to country. So worldwide, you're talking millions and millions of people with this problem. Well, and Dr. DeWitt mentioned just briefly just now about the fact that there's really not much that can be done other than life changes, significant life changes now. What's interesting is, from an academic standpoint interesting, is that spontaneous healing seems to end about 6 to 12 months after an accident. And so the majority of these people, again, the 5+ million in this country, there are some that have what might be called severe injury, where they require institutionalization or close to 24/7 care at home. Others adjust by having a new normal. That is, their new normal is not as good as the old normal, but they can get by. But there's this really significant group that can't get by, and these are the ones that we address. These are the ones that, again, can't make it to the grocery store, or they lose their jobs, or the typical sequence of events that occurs with our patients is that they'll say after their accident, they lose their ability to concentrate, they lose their personal relationships, they oftentimes lose their homes, their marriages, their jobs, and some of them lose their lives because of progressive deterioration and abject frustration with what's occurring. And this is what we claim to be able to reverse.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the incidence is high. It is, it's a really worldwide significant unmet medical need, especially for the chronic case.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think for both of you, but starting with Dr. McMichael, and I know that you speak quite a bit about inflammation as being one of the one of the major issues. Talk a little bit about inflammation and how that is compounding the problem.
Well, all right, we've got to be careful. We don't want to give inflammation a black flag altogether, and it's a very important early defensive mechanism. But what happens is inflammation carried to an extreme results in, among other things, scarring. Just as an example, there's chronic inflammation in all of us that becomes more important as a consequence of aging. Inflammation that occurs, for example, simply by blood cells in our vascular system rolling along blood vessels. And when, as they roll along the blood vessel walls, there's a tiny amount of inflammation there, just a little bit of friction. And that results over the years in collagen or connective tissue being laid down along the blood vessel walls. The consequence of that is decreased flexibility of the blood vessel walls, and so we get hypertension, high blood pressure, and we call that normal aging. With the brain injury, there are certain populations of cells, like what are called microglial cells, that are sent to the area of damage, and these are cells that are associated with inflammation. And as long as those cells come, there's going to be inflammation. So now, again, just like with the blood vessels, what happens if you have chronic inflammation? You're going to have scar tissue laid down. And scar tissue in the brain is, from a chemical component angle, a little bit different from scar tissue other places in the body. But the point of it here is that scar tissue interferes with the normal transmission of signals from one nerve cell to another. And that's what that's the problem. If we can remove that scar tissue or decrease it, allow the nerves to carry out their normal function, you're ahead of the game. And one of the steps in doing that is let's decrease inflammation. We don't want to knock out inflammation altogether in the body, again, because it is a respected defensive mechanism. We want inflammation to be controlled. And so we need to decrease the inflammation in the area of the brain injury, and that's one thing that our medicine seems to do. And it does that, again, by decreasing infiltration of those cells that are associated with inflammation.
Now, we have some listener questions that have come in, and we have one here that reads, my dear friend had a car accident 3 years ago. Up until that time, she was a well-known, successful artist in our community. She has stopped painting, stating that her creativity and focus just aren't there any longer. And it says, after reading a little bit about your SLO on the information sent out by Answers for the Family, I just know that she would jump at a chance to get on this treatment. How do we stay up on the latest developments and availability, or is there anything we can do to help speed this up? And this is from Harriet in Virginia.
I would like to answer that in a really roundabout way, all right?
Okay.
Just because I think that that Harriet might be interested in a case history that with an artist, just of the sort that she's talking about her friend there.
Mm-hmm.
One of our patients was an artist in a car accident. This artist depended a great deal on dreams for her creativity.
Hmm.
And interestingly enough, after the accident, she quit dreaming. And she mentions, this lady mentions how not only did dreaming stop, but she no longer felt like her brain was connected to her body, almost as if there was somebody else in there. So as a consequence of starting our therapeutic approach, after about 4 weeks, she started dreaming again. And just a few months ago, I was with her, and she showed me a photograph of a painting she had just completed on commission, which was the first painting she had done since her accident. So this can come back. Now, that doesn't answer the question. The question is, to keep up with it, you can take a look at our website. There are a couple of them you might want to look at. One is just Resolus Bio. That's the name of our company, R-E-S-O-L-Y-S, resolusbio.com. And there's Beech Tree Labs, which is kind of the mother company of Resolus. Beech, just like the tree, B-E-E-C-H, Beech Tree Labs, plural.com. And in terms of moving things ahead, I'm not here to raise money, but that's the name of the game for us, is we move ahead by getting the funding to do the clinical trials. We have treated about 36 or so patients, what would be called anecdotally. These are patients that physicians in our group have treated because they are patients they've known for a while. They know there's nothing really that can be done for them. They're confident that what they're doing is safe. They want to see if it can help. They are not part of any kind of clinical trial. There's no placebo, no blinded trial, nothing like that. They're simply physicians treating their patients, hoping for improvement. That's the they have generated the data that gives us confidence of moving to the formal FDA trials, jumping through the agency's hoops to get this product to where a larger pharmaceutical firm would be interested in getting it on the market. And for us, this early work is really a matter of de-risking it so a potential licensee will jump at it and get it to the people that need it.
All right, we're going to take a break. For everybody out there, we are talking with Dr. John McMichael, Dr. John DeWitt. The subject matter is traumatic brain injuries. When we come back, we have another question coming in from a listener that goes directly towards young football players and the effects that it's having on them. So for everybody, stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. This is Answers for the Family. We are talking about traumatic brain injuries. We have with us Dr. John McMichael and Dr. John DeWitt. When we went to break, there is another listener question. This one reads, I've been a high school teacher for 25 years, and during this time, I have seen several young football players suffer serious head injuries that negatively affected their academic performance. I believe the big business of football in our schools to feed colleges and professional leagues is never going away. Can you comment on how your treatment would help out kids with these injuries, and is there a cure or an ongoing lifelong treatment protocol that could help? And this is from Gregory in Hawaii.
Is that for me or Dr. McMichael?
well, let's
go,
start.
Go ahead. Dr. DeWitt, you jumped in. Go ahead, and then I'll follow.
All right. Okay. I'll jump in real quick. Well, it's not necessarily a therapy solution, but one of the things that happens that I think should happen, that is the only thing that might possibly happen because it is such big business with football and the contact sports, is that not letting your kids play full contact football until they're older, until they're 15, 16, however long you can wait, and just have them play flag football That way they're not smashing heads and rattling their brains around quite as much, at least, and they still have the reaction time and can learn how to run the routes and do all the stuff, and still have an opportunity to earn a scholarship to college, because I'm sure that's a lot of what the parents are hoping for and the kids as well. And so just postponing starting full contact football, because I had friends that started playing football when they were in the, when they were like 9 years old and played full contact as long as they could function. And it just, it's just frustrating, because I started and my best friend didn't play. And I was like, well, then I'm not going to play if he's not playing. And luckily that put it off at least until the sixth grade. But still, it was, I was only, what, 12 years old at that point. I mean, it's just not, we need to stop having the kids injuring themselves. I mean, I know they've already cut back on two-a-day practices. They don't really do that anymore, but it, we need to just postpone the full contact football for the younger folks.
And Dr. McMichael, what I'm wondering is that, you know, the treatment that you're working on now, is it something where there is a preventative aspect of it, that if it was given to younger people at the time in which they're first starting to get involved in more contact sports, is there anything that would benefit from that standpoint?
Good question, for which we don't have any data to answer it. My wild guess would be that if you're going to do it right, it wouldn't hurt to take a drop of this stuff after every practice just in case. It certainly wouldn't do any harm from what we know to date, and it might very well help. Again, as Dr. DeWitt mentioned earlier, it would help on the anti-inflammatory side. And as we saw in a small study that we did with mice with acute traumatic brain injury, we saw a resolution of the problem within just a matter of a couple of days. And so it would be useful, but we have not done any work of a sort that would give us hard data to that effect. So I'm just hypothesizing, really.
Now, of the people that you have treated, because you've talked about the fact that there are some that you have, can you describe a little bit about their demographics, for example, their age, or male or female, their occupation, and you mentioned a little bit about how they were chosen, just the part about the fact that the doctors knew them, but was there something else about what was going on with their condition that, that made them the right person or right candidate for this?
Let's start with one who is a physician himself. Okay, here's a physician in a car accident, serious car accident. He goes through the process, or the sequence of events that I mentioned earlier. He loses his job as a physician. He loses his family, loses his house, thinks seriously of suicide because he's lost everything that meant anything to him. After some 2 years after his accident, we started him on therapy. Step back. One interesting symptom this man had was what's called hyperacusis, which is hypersensitivity to sound. Dr. DeWitt would be familiar with that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And with this fellow, this physician, the sounds that bothered him most were the sounds of his daughter's voices.
Ugh.
Can you imagine that? And they couldn't be in the same house. And so the family separated. So when we first started, he was unable really to put thoughts together to form a coherent conversation. He would go from subject to subject, middle of a sentence, and so forth. Very, very bright man, very intelligent. Just that's part of the symptomatology of his case. And so he's come around now to the fact that he's practicing medicine again. The hyperacusis is gone. He's not 100% better. I don't mean to imply that, but he's well on his way to regaining his life. The family's back together and so forth. So that's one. There's a male, late 50s, early 60s, and was a colleague of one of the physicians in our group, and that's how he got on.
How long was he on the therapy?
Well, he's still on it.
Right.
He was on it about 3 to 4 weeks before these changes started to be noted.
Nice.
Yep. Here's one that is kind of interesting in a little bit different way. This is a young man, a teenager, who shot himself in the head. And whether it was an accident or a suicide attempt, I don't know, and it doesn't really matter. But this fellow was obviously in terrible shape, and he had shot himself quite a number of months prior to seeing the physician for the first time for this situation. And this is a fairly recent case in our group, and it's interesting to me because of what the physician related to me just a week or two ago, and that is the young fellow came into the office about 2 weeks ago. His balance was better. He was walking better. His speech was clearly better. His eyes had a little bit more life in them and so forth. But I thought what was most interesting was first thing the young man did was go over and give the physician a big hug and say thank you. I have a life. And that's the sort of thing we see fairly routinely. I'll just give you one more and not bore you with a whole bunch of examples. But here's a lady who is a bilingual speech therapist. After an accident, was neither bilingual nor capable of being a speech therapist. She couldn't find words, which is a tough deal for a speech therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And she noticed after 3 or 4 weeks that that ability was coming back, and she's back to practicing now after having been out of practice for 2 or 3 years. She's able to come back. She's, again, not the whole way back, but she's continuing to improve. We don't know how long it takes to get back. Do they ever get back the whole way? Don't know, because in a lot of cases, there might be as long as a decade or more between the accident and when they started with us. So what role does aging play, for example, to confound the interpretation of results? So there are lots and lots of variables, but what we have seen consistently is a return to normalcy in the way of better emotional control, better executive function, better memory, able to read, communicate. There's things like the hyperacusis, the sensitivity to sound is gone. Oftentimes these patients will complain about visual overexcitement. You know, that's if they see a checkerboard pattern on a wall, for example, that'll be enough to make them leave the room. It's just too much. And they learn to be able to, or they get better to the point of being able to handle that like any of the rest of us uninjured would be able to handle it. So that's what we see. We've not selected patients arbitrarily or searched for patients. It's not hard to find them. And each physician in our group has several that were known to the physician before starting the therapy. So that's kind of a nutshell summary.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sitting here just thinking, I mean, there has got to be a way to be able to move this along faster.
I'm all for it. The excitement to us is making the people better. That's what counts. And you just have to jump through the hoops. And I don't have any arguments with the FDA. You've got to show that it's safe. You have to show that it's that it works. And to do that, there are established mechanisms, and that's what we have to go through.
What about in other countries? Are there any other countries in which something like this is moving, or yours is moving faster?
Well, we always hear rumors of that, but as a consequence of World Health Organization harmonization laws, we don't find much difference country to country. There might be some nuances that are a little bit different, but you still have to do pretty much the same clinical trials. And if you do a trial in another country, to get approval here in this country, you have to do another trial. So it's just one of those things you have to bite your tongue and go. For us, the frustration, as mentioned, I don't want to harp on it, but the frustration has been finances to push it through. But even with all the finances, it still takes time.
Now, for those that have listened to the show for a long time, I'm not always a big supporter of big pharma, but it would seem like the value of this is so great. Why wouldn't one of the big pharmaceutical companies want to come in and partner with you to make this go through quicker? It does seem like it obviously has an ability to be monetized, which I know is a huge issue for them. So is there a reason that's not happening, or is it something let me put it bluntly, is there a reason that they wouldn't want something like this on the market because it would harm so many of the other drugs that they already have out there?
No, I don't think there's any reason like that. I think the reason that no one's banging on our doors is that we have not yet de-risked it to a point that they find sufficient. Just to give you an example, not with Big Pharma, but with the military, which you would imagine might have an interest in something like this. And we've done some work with a professional from the Department of Defense, a statistician, who is has a career with traumatic brain injury. And we have some stats that show that our work is real. It's not just a placebo effect. This fellow has actually done some really sophisticated work on our behalf and agrees that this is something he's never seen quite like it. So I asked him a little while ago, I said, well, gee, sir, don't you think your boss and the people in the DOD would be interested in this since we see the stats, what are the 22, 23 suicides a day from patients suffering from traumatic brain injury and PTSD and so forth? There's a huge, huge crying need. And the response to my question from this fellow was, no, they would not be. The military is not interested in what you're doing at this stage. And the reason is that the military, according to this fellow, the reason is that the military has put hundreds of millions, if not a couple billion dollars, into perceived cures or treatments for chronic traumatic brain injury, and none of them have worked. So until you've gone through an FDA trial to show safety and efficacy and de-risk it, they're just inclined to put more money into it. Now, is that real or not? I'm only relating what one person has told me. But here, ask the NFL, the National Football League, don't you think they would jump on a thing like this? And we've talked to the NFL, and again, in their defense, they've said, listen, every week somebody comes up to us with a great cure for traumatic brain injury. How do we separate the real from the fake? Well, the easiest way to do that is let the FDA trials go through their normal steps. Then if you have safety and efficacy, we're all for it. So it's kind of a chicken and the egg sort of thing. For individual investors, the risk is this, that the textbooks say nothing can be done for chronic traumatic brain injury. We have on our scientific advisory board a fellow who is very well known as one of the leading lights in the world for brain imaging. This man has hundreds of publications, very well regarded and rightfully so. And we ask him to come and visit some of the physicians in our group who have experience with this product, as well as interview some of the patients who have had experience taking the product. And so we had a pretty full day of meetings. And at the end of that day, this gentleman said to me, he said, for 40 years, I've been lecturing to my graduate students and medical students that nothing can be done for traumatic brain injury patients after 6 to 12 months. There's just nothing that can be done. He says, after today's exposure to what's going on here, I'm going to change my lecture. Uh-huh. Well, that's exciting to us, but we need more people to see that, to get the enthusiasm going, and then we need to de-risk by going through the traditional hoops for a non-traditional medicine.
Right.
What's in the market will be administered, and I don't know if you can predict. I mean, is it something that can be done that's affordable to everybody?
Yeah, that's really, I can tell you how it's administered by our patients. They simply take a drop under their tongue. They carry a little vial around with them, and three or four times a day, take a dropper out, put one drop under their tongue, and that's it, walk away. There might be much more sophisticated, handier mechanisms for delivery that people much brighter than I know about, and that the pharmaceutical companies will want, I don't know. And in terms of cost, that would be determined by a licensee, not by us. So I really don't know. I don't know what the cost would be per patient. It does not have to be huge because production costs are not high. But again, with some deference to defense of the industry, price is oftentimes based on value rather than cost. So that if the stats are correct, we're familiar with that, say that for a chronic traumatic brain injury, if you take all the costs associated with that patient on an annual basis, and you know, I'm not sure what all factors are involved, but you know, for caregivers and time lost at work, this, that, and the other thing, it can, and that's even with or without institutionalization, it can easily be $100,000 to $500,000 per patient per year. I mean, that's huge.
Sure.
So if you had a therapy that cost $10,000, that's a lot of money. It's a heck of a savings versus what there was. So I don't know, but there's lots to be decided as we jump through the hoops, and that will have to be decided by people in the industry, not by our little group.
Now, is there anything planned in the near future? You know, when we mentioned a little bit about dementia, is your group in a position to be able to set up a, and again, not an official, I guess, control group, but I mean, a group that they could start working with it in areas like dementia that may speed up the overall process by being able to show that, well, look, it's going to have more than one application, you know, that rather than just this type of traumatic brain injury, there are these other types of, although neurological, are still fall into that category. Would that get more support, say, from a big pharma or a government or maybe even the, the longevity and biohacking community?
I don't know in terms of likelihood of increased support. I will tell you that we are working with dementia patients, a small handful of those, and we use the same molecule we use for traumatic brain injury, but we add two others to it. So it's a little bit more complex formulation than traumatic brain injury is. Our early work has been done with Parkinson's patients with Parkinsonian dementia and some Alzheimer's, and then dementia of unknown origin. And we're seeing some improvements there. We can't focus on it too much simply because of lack of resources on our end, but we would expect to have a follow-on program for dementia as we move the traumatic brain injury product forward. That's, again, it's all a matter of resources, but I think the pieces are in place to just exactly as you suggest.
Would it be possible, you mentioned earlier in regards to it's all about the money, if a group came in and wanted to focus on that population, is that something that may work if they came in and said, look, we're going to contribute X amount of dollars towards this?
Sure.
But we want it to focus in this area? So that is a possibility?
Sure.
Okay.
You know, that can certainly be done either by investors or by donors. That is, we mm-hmm. have a not-for-profit organization called the Institute for Therapeutic Discovery. It accepts donations, and we have Resolus Bio, the company that is focused on the traumatic brain injury, and you know, investors can come that way. So either way, yes. And if a group decided that they wanted to, you know, push something through, bankroll something through, we would be glad to talk to them about how best to do it.
All right. Well, we are about out of time, but for anybody out there, if you didn't get a chance to take that down, if you're driving or whatever, I'll make sure that we have it on the Answers for the Family website, both how to get a hold of of Dr. McMichael in regards to if you want to make a donation, if you want to get more involved, anything like that. I'll make sure that it's on the Answers for the Family website that you can take that down. So, Dr. McMichael, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure. And, thank you for the invite.
Well, and please... come back. I mean, just let us know when you know that you're 6 months from a breakthrough or whatever. You know, give us a call. Let us know so that we can schedule some time close to that time and be part of getting the word out to people that it is moving forward. And
yeah, absolutely, yeah. Fascinating stuff.
Glad to do it. Thank you.
All right, and now John DeWitt.
Yes.
So. First of all, just thanks for taking the time. I know that you were really busy this morning,
yeah.
But also Share a little bit about people that if they want to, you know, you talked about some of the more holistic approach. You talked about some of the things that people can do in lifestyle. If people want to get a hold of you, or they want to, if they want to join your concussion class webinar, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
All right. The one of the best ways actually is I did a blog on Blog Talk Radio. It was a podcast kind of a thing. I've got 107 episodes on there that talks all about brain health, all the different holistic ways to do it. It's at blogtalkradio.com/brainbuilders with an S. I've got several books on Amazon that you can go check out, and some more videos on that on my Amazon author page. That's at amazon.com/author/Dr. John DeWitt. There is a theme here, yes. And finally, my YouTube channel is youtube.com/user/Dr. John DeWitt. And it's just Dr. John DeWitt, no, not spelled out or anything like that. So I've got vision tips, I got brain health, I've got motivational stuff. It's just anything I can do to help as much as I can, and I'm just excited to find out more about Dr. McMichael's product and hoping it works out.
Yeah, me too, and the sooner the better. So again, Thanks for joining. Again, know that you're welcome here anytime. When you can, set up a Monday, and let's get you in studio as well.
Thanks. Sounds good. I had a great time.
All right. Now, for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we will be joined by Chris Chris Francure to discuss her new book, Of Grief, Garlic, and Gratitude. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe to the show through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people, and we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us, and please spread the word and be good human beings. Be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.